Okay, welcome back. Welcome to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, and everybody snapped up a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb on behalf of the Prime Minister John Key, who used to work for Merrill Lynch as a foreign derivatives trader, to help the economy. My very special guests,
plural,
is Luke McKee and his father, Jeff McKee. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinny. Can you hear me?
Can hear you just fine. You've come on for the second hour to sort of support what Luke has been saying. I was wondering if you'd be able to give us a sort of a brief summary of how you feel this whole situation is arising.
Okay, Vinny, I've listened to some of your other shows, and I think you're a very good interviewer. You know, you listen, and I think you've got a lot of empathy. So you've asked me now how I feel, have you?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, well, look, the listeners might be saying, well, who the hell is this guy, Luke McKee? Is he crazy trying to take on the police? Just a one man with an internet modem. I mean, being a father of Luke has been caused huge anxiety. Can you understand that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and but I've learnt a lot through Luke's continuing to engage with Luke while he's in exile overseas. You know, he's asked me to attend this court case and that court case. And through those experiences of me, you know, listening to these problematic court cases, I have actually come to realise that what he's on about actually is true and exists. The terrible, terrible impact on poor individuals who find themselves a victim of basically lies on a police fact sheet. I mean, I've got this theory that that lying is actually the root of all evil. And to connect, you know, the father of all lies, of course, is all flows out of, in my research, this is another whole story, but it all flows out of 9/11, which is like, you know, the manufacturing of reality. And the only way to deal with it is to be ignorant about what went on. And this is what I think on your show you talk about people being either awake or asleep, do you?
Indeed.
Yeah, well, have you ever heard the expression ignorance is bliss?
I have, and I found it's that phrase, ignorance of bliss, reminds me of the Ayn Rand quote where she says, you can ignore reality, but you can't ignore the consequences of ignoring reality.
Right. Now, what I want to do is, I'm not going to go into Luke's narrative now. That's his trip due to his traumatic experience of all starting in 2007 when he experienced what it's like to be on the end of a false fact sheet where there are deliberate lies on a fact sheet in order to convict some poor bastard for something he didn't do. I mean, this is a terrible crime. And he told me to go to a court case yesterday. I sat through it. I saw a constable in the dock for 3 hours for basically fabricating a fact sheet. And to be honest, I had a bit of empathy for that constable. For 2 or 3 hours, he had to sit there perjuring himself, and it was quite obvious to the judge because he couldn't undo the lie that he'd already done in order to falsely convict some poor bastard Okay. Are you with me?
I'm with you.
Okay, now...
May I interject? Would you like to...
No, sorry. Hurry, Luke. I'm talking about... Vinny is interviewing me here, and this is the father's perspective. Now, regarding ignorance is bliss, I want to explain, I think Luke has a lot of anger in him, and I've been, as a father, I've been trying to encourage him to get rid of this anger in more constructive ways, because there's nothing good comes out of hate and revenge. Would you agree with that, Vinny?
It's funny you should mention that. I had a conversation with a friend about that this morning before coming on the show, that hate's baggage, really.
Yeah,
and
Now, what you notice, I'm pleased with Luke. I don't mind Luke. He's evolved now after 5 years of anger. I think the hatred and revenge is dissipating, and now he's becoming more of an activist, which is quite legitimate. And so he's got a political objective now, which is to overturn a bad law that he was pinged by, you see. Now, that's perfectly legitimate, and it's in the realm of rational activism, but not in the world of personal revenge, because it gets you nowhere. Now, getting back to my ignorance is bliss, I want to explain that when he was... traumatized in 2007 with this terrible experience of being arrested and falsely charged and dragged through the courts, and then his anger after that led him to, instead of moving on, he was so angry he wanted to kind of get revenge, and he tried to complain to all these authorities about an injustice. And I'm going to say something here. It's been how many years? At that time in 2007, our whole family was traumatised, suffering huge grief and confusion because Luke's younger brother, my son, he disappeared on the 13th of November 2006, and his body wasn't found for 69 days. And he'd spent a whole year studying 9/11 and peak oil, and he had this guru. Have you heard of Michael Rupert?
Yep, he was actually the first documentary I ever saw that kind of woke me up to the truth, was by Michael Rupert, called The Truth and Lies of 9/11.
Yeah, well, he ordered that book into the Sydney University Library. It was called Crossing the Rubicon. It was all about 9/11 and peak oil, and I think Michael Rupert became his guru, if you like. And I wasn't aware he was reading it, but records show he renewed the book three times, and I noticed once he was reading it on his bed, and it was almost like a Bible. That was a 19-year-old kid. Very, very bright, with a sense of humour, a student of history, a top history student, discovering for the first time how the world works. And I think it was just too much for his brain. And after a year of this, he made a decision. The way to solve, that there was no future anywhere in this, he called it a nonsense suicide civilisation. You know, he was so, can you imagine somebody being so disillusioned and so alienated from the world that they would just want to go and end it all? Can you imagine that?
I see it happen more often than I'd like.
Okay, now,
the people in this movement.
This is getting back to my ignorance is bliss. Now, my youngest son knew too much, right? He was like Luke. He just spent a whole year, it was all about Iraq, the war on terror, 9/11, and he had... At 19-year-old, he had this this guru, Michael Rupert. Now, am I leading this interview in the wrong direction?
Well, I'd like you to kind of finish this. Maybe just a little, because this isn't just me interviewing you. Okay. This is sort of all three of us participating in sort of a conversation about what we're feeling and what we're doing and that kind of thing, you know, free flow.
What I'm leading to is the fact that when Luke was arrested, he was still suffering enormous anger and confusion and grief over the loss of his younger brother, right? And I think that he was so angry then that it led him to do extreme things as a way of, this built up anger inside. So he's been taking it out on seeking justice, you know, and he hasn't let go of this in 5 years. But I'm quite happy now that he seems to be, he seems to be evolved to a new stage now. But it's causing a lot of problems in the family, in that my wife and my daughter are really unhappy that I should ever come on the show or do anything to encourage Luke's behaviour, because there's all this fear, you see, and their attitude is you never get involved in these things because there's this innate fear of the powers that be.
Well, there's an old quote, I think it might have been from Jefferson, when the people fear the government, there is tyranny. And when the government fears the people, there is freedom.
I want to
make later, for the Citizens Ombudsman's Organisation project, I want to make police fearful of the man on the grassy knoll that's watching them, investigating them, that's preparing a case to slam them in the Supreme Court when they're up on the stand and there's nothing they can do. And I want to let everyone participate and have a chance to upset this balance of power.
Mm. Now, with activism, what I've found is it starts often as a personal vendetta, and then the realization dawns on the activist that I'm not the only person who this has happened to. And more to the point, that there's a flare of altruism that comes out. I don't want this kind of thing that's happened to me to happen to anybody else. And unfortunately, nobody else is trying to solve this problem, so the responsibility comes to me. Traditionally, throughout history, it's been individuals that have solved major societal problems, not the masses.
Okay, well, can I just say something there? Yeah, I think you are so right that I think Luke is starting to get some empathy, because initially it was all him being a victim, but what he's doing now, he's pointed me to other people who have become victims of false fact sheets, and so I think there is enormous empathy for these people who have ended up traumatized. Just as he was. And so empathy is always good. Now, this is going to lead me to my what I want to tell you is to say the police are this or the police is that is really black and white thinking. Now, what I want to say is that I'm holding a book in my hand. It's called Snakes in Suits, When Psychopaths Go to Work. Now, people get afraid of the term psychopath, but I've studied it for a few years, and all it is a person just like you or me or Luke, but, very, very intelligent, skilled, but without a conscience. Can you understand that?
I've studied psychopathy extensively. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right. Where I'm leading at is that if you get a binomial distribution of humans, both inside the police force and outside the police force, you know, there will probably be statistics showing about 1 in 20 would be without a conscience, okay? But the person without a conscience can be very, very intelligent, be very manipulative, and they could do very well within the organisation. And that's what I'm saying about the police, is that Luke is going on about police that don't have a conscience. They're prepared to punish somebody unjustly and put their arse in the stern just because they enjoy it. You know, it's like
every officer in my case was promoted including Detective Sergeant Michael O'Keefe, who wrote the 60C search warrant, now investigates deaths in custody. So if I go back to Australia,
so what I'm trying to say is that Luke has experienced being treated by police who are psychopaths. It sounds pretty serious, but I'm saying they don't have a conscience. Okay, now
can I interject here? Because what happens with psychopathy, and the American Medical Journal has stated that psychopaths are generally smiling people who are very enchanting but don't have a whole lot of long-lasting relationships in their lives, and that the three most likely industries you are to find psychopaths are politics, business, and entertainment industries. Now, also there's a documentary called I Am Fish Head. It comes from the old Chinese proverb that says a fish rots from the head. And what it was detailing was psychopaths in the banking industry. And one part of what you said kind of stuck out at me that comes from that documentary is that, let's say there's three people up for promotion, three people who are really good at their job, and one of them's a psychopath. What that one psychopath will do is he will sabotage those other two people to the point where they won't want to work for that organization anymore. So they quit, and the psychopath gets himself in the top position. And this is what happens, I believe, in many, many organizations, including the police, where good people choose to leave and the psychopaths choose to stay and get promoted because they destroy the reputations of the other good people around them in order to advance themselves through scumbaggery. And my friend Grace Hayden, who's a 15-year prosecuting sergeant for the New Zealand police, said that the New Zealand police are so corrupt that you either become corrupt or you leave. She left.
Yeah, well, look, you are touching here on basically a theory of how human societies evolve, and I've come to accept this theory because it makes more sense to me to see that governments and people in power can actually be very, very clever people, highly intelligent, good communication skills, highly manipulative, but without a conscience. Now, people will be shocked to hear me say, or they won't be shocked to hear me say that, say, Hitler was a psychopath because he had no conscience, but he was a brilliant orator, right? Now, what I'm saying is that this is very extreme, but I can look at Obama, for example, and he could very well be a psychopath because his behaviour and some of the laws he's signing, using drones to execute innocent people, and that's what psychopathy is. So my theory is that within the police, maybe 1 in 20 doesn't have a conscience, but you can't generalise. My experience is that 95% are wonderful people. Does that make sense?
It does. Hold on a second. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Jeff and Luke McKee are my guests on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Back in a tick.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Welcome back.
I've been to Reno, Chicago.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that goes everywhere that people fear to tread. Because in a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. My very special guests are Luke and his father, Jeff McKee. Now, you had a clip of an ABC broadcaster or something of that nature that you wish to play and preface?
Oh, and what it's all about? Yes. Just to let your listeners know what we're talking about, just tuned in, we're talking about a thought crime of putting information in your noggin, which incriminates police, that the police minister said was set up as a preventative framework to prevent harm happening to officers in the future when he introduced it. So it's Minority Report, Meet 1984 by George Orwell. What happened is my dad was talking about other cases I've been involved in also around 60C. There's one case we haven't mentioned out of the three I know of the possible, well, there's only two cases before me down in Milton, and, you know, two convictions, 100% conviction rate, no case law, secret matter. But ABC News, the police decided to break tradition with 60C, being a secret whistleblower execution framework kill switch law, and put a press release out saying, and I'll put the links up very at the end of the show, that an Aboriginal boy, a youth had done, made a statement, was the police's words, on a social networking site at this time to the exact minute, and he's going to court on this date. ABC News named the page, okay, he made the statement on, and made the false claim he created the page, even though it never came out in court. And we actually believe the police created the page themselves for entrapment purposes. That's my opinion. So they made the false claim without using the word allegedly, and then they get a man who was on the AIDS Council of South Australia. So you have to be a precursor for that job is being gay, who's a former ABC producer, come online, he's an IT commentator by the name of Stilgarian, who's busy on ZDNet plugging geoengineering, and they don't talk about everything we're talking about, the truth, what we're doing now, Revolutionary Act. They say that the boy's an idiot, oh, and how disgusting it is, and he says something very interesting about Facebook. I won't spoil the surprise. I'm going to play these two little clips now. Here we go.
Back to the teenagers and whoever's behind these silly sites in Port Macquarie, the Rootability site in particular. I don't know. Teenagers have always had a tendency to do some pretty stupid things, but in my day as a teenager, I've become one of those people. We didn't have the capacity to disseminate information in the same way that we do now. We might have scrawled some nasty words on the back of the toilet door at school or gossiped around the quadrangle at lunch, but it didn't really go any further than that.
That's right. And the other factor is that once something is online, it's there permanently, it's searchable, and it's very difficult, you know, to make it go away and to cover it up. And this is going to be a challenge for kids growing up because they're going to do normal teenage stuff. And, you know, there's no way we can stop that. Kids will do reckless things. That's what kids do. It's just that once it gets to 20, 30 years down the track, someone's going to drag that up again, and it'll be an embarrassment. I'm wondering, and this is just perhaps more of a hope than a wondering, that, you know, after an initial few years of shock, horror, look at the terrible things these kids are doing, or someone runs for public office, wants to become, you know, mayor of the local town, and then can't because someone digs out a Facebook post from when they were 17 to embarrass them. That will happen, but I'm wondering whether in a couple of decades we might not be quite so judgmental of people, that because our childhood foibles are exposed to the world, and everybody has them, that we'll become a bit more laid back about them.
Still Gearing with us on ABC Mid-North Coast. He's an internet commentator. We're talking about Facebook. We were having a chat about this at the station, and the question I posed to my colleagues was, what would have happened if some of the key figures in our recent history had access to social media and social networking? And I used Hitler as the example. Imagine if Hitler had used Facebook and Twitter.
God. Totally off topic they are, and then it gets even more strange.
That would have to be the ultimate marketing list, wouldn't it?
Oh, it is absolutely incredible, because you can tell so much about someone just through who their friends are. Mm-hmm. And the classic example of that is someone has already done analysis of Facebook friend networks and worked out who's gay or not purely on the basis of who they're friends with and what interests they show, often before that person themselves has figured out that they're gay.
For those who detest social networking, is it avoidable or is it inevitable?
It's inevitable. I mean, it's...
Okay, so what actually happened is an Aboriginal boy, and this is all...
Hold on, 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 hold on. Before you continue, I just want to counteract your point. What if Hitler had had access to social networking? Okay, Hitler took a census so that he knew the religion and the nationality and the job and the number of people and everything of everywhere. Hitler had state TV and radio broadcasting him all day, every day, practically. Hitler had censors to make sure any other broadcaster wasn't able to say a bad word against him. And you're afraid that he'll somehow have an unfair advantage if he has Twitter or Facebook.
I know, it's crazy. And speaking of the government does have an advantage because people in Australia might know of the OneTel collapse of a phone company. And Jody Rich from that's moved on just to get into big data mining from Facebook. He's got the Twitter feed as well. So the governments are actually watching what we all do collectively, and they all get the big Facebook and Twitter feed, and they already know what's going on. So they don't really need to, you know, go on the social networking sites themselves. They know what everyone else is saying about them. It's a new form of polling. But anyway, let's say what actually happened. And this is all government sources I'm about to say. If you don't believe what I'm saying, you're a conspiracy theorist because you should believe what the government tells you. So ABC News named the Facebook page, the police at the time of the statement, and Google Corporation, which we can say is a government entity practically, saved a cache copy of the page, which I'll put online on Alex Jones's InfoWars forums back in the day. And he made a one-line comment. He called a police officer. Can I say the word? Three-letter word? Starting with F means gay. Okay? And he called a detective, Blake Keating, a F-A-G. And then the Aboriginal boy was charged with obtaining true personal information on a law enforcement officer. Now, what happened was, is the police tried to spin it in the court case because the boy pled not guilty. Now, I have a another tape of a police officer in that police station saying that the boy confessed to this horrendous crime. And I'm going to talk more after this.
Okay, I'm going to make... I haven't finished.
You're still not going to...
Before the court date, I'm going to have every Aboriginal group in Australia trying to get this law repealed. I don't care.
Please.
You're not going to win against me. Do you understand?
Fighting you.
We're not yes, you are.
We're telling you that this young person has profusely apologised for making a mistake.
So you're saying Benji was charged?
Sorry?
Are you saying Benji Morris was charged?
Who?
You're saying that the young boy was charged? Benji Morris was charged.
As you're aware, the young fellow was charged and he's admitted to it and apologised profusely directly to the officer involved. He's apologised for making a mistake.
Are you going to prosecute him for this, even though he's allegedly apologised?
Yes, he's going through the court system. Listen to me. Okay, he's going through the court system. It is up to the court to decide his penalties.
Is the police officer gay? Do you understand crime of obtaining true information?
Listen.
Is the detective gay or have you charged him incorrectly? Answer the question.
I did not understand the question. What was the question?
Luke? Is Detective Blake Keating gay? Is the detective gay because the personal information... You don't get 5 years jail for obtaining false personal information. The basis of the charge is you allege...
What? You've changed your tack now, have you?
Who cares of what you think he's apologised for? Has he obtained true personal information? Is it true that so the detective is gay? What? The detective Blake Keating is gay.
Look, what are the proofs of the offence?
Based on the 60C Crimes Act, is the crime of obtaining true personal information? Is the detective gay?
You give me what are the proofs of the offence?
What?
What are the proofs of the offence? You look up the Crimes Act and you get back to me with the proofs of the offence before you talk to us any further.
I do have proof of the offence. Google cased a copy of it.
All right, well, you tell me, what are the proofs of the offence?
Why don't you go look at the current version of the page?
No, you're wrong. You tell me the proofs of the offence. You get back to me and you tell me the proofs before you go.
You keep ranting all you want, but the pain hasn't even been turned on yet. I've only been at you for a couple of days, but by the end of a couple of weeks, you'll be wishing. I mean, ASIO aren't going to stop me. You'll be praying for ASIO to hunt me down and kill me, basically, by the time
I'm starting to wonder if you just want a date with him.
you want to say, I want to date? Is that the best you've got? You know, I can't be gay. I'm married in a foreign country and I'm a resident. You can't cancel my visa. You can't do shits to me. I've got friends. I'm playing that interview to my good friends in Interpol, okay? I've got a date with them on Monday, actually. Yeah, Interpol. They're in Sordaimut, mate. Yeah. Hey, do you want to see me? I had a meeting with them in 2008, and there's a record of my meeting complaining against 60C
Luke,
Crimes Act.
Luke, what are the
a foreign government
agency. You're going to do your homework for me. You look up the proofs of the offence for Section 60C, mate, and you get back to me.
I've had Barrett legal advice.
Yeah, I'll stop it there. But the proof of the offence, basically they're saying obtain personal information on a law enforcement officer for purposes of harassment. But when the law was introduced, everyone, including the police, the current police minister, who was then leader of the opposition, Michael Gallagher, and the police minister introduced it, Michael Costa, back then, said obtaining a police officer's name is not an offence, and they laughed at Lee Rhiannon when she predicted this law would be misused. Now, I did say Lee Rhiannon put a press release out against the law, but the Greens have dropped their own social justice and human rights agenda against this obscene law because, I guess, authoritarian gays with guns, it's a hate crime to know you've been discriminated against, are more important. And Lee Rhiannon was the one who tried to push through the gay marriage laws in New South Wales, so case in point. So I'm not against gay people. I'm against, you know, them not being equal. Now, the what do you think of all that? This boy was found not guilty in court. My dad's going to give the coverage of what he actually saw happen in the courtroom because he was in Australia. But the police officer was not gay and had charged a teenager with the crime of knowing he was. So the magistrate, when dealing with the boy pleading not guilty and with decent legal counsel, the magistrate goes, oh, my God, the boy's going to ask the police officer what his sexuality was. So he tries to reframe it and say, no, you didn't obtain, you weren't charged with 60C because he couldn't say obtaining a name. He couldn't say gay because the officer wasn't gay. So he said, you were charged with Section 60C Crimes Act, but the offending language you used was the word especially in your Facebook one-line comment linking to the title of the Facebook group, All Port Macquarie Police Are Corrupt. So Magistrate Hogston in Port Macquarie said it's a crime to know true personal information a law enforcement officer is corrupt. It's a crime. And that's exactly what the Greens predicted, and they're still not doing anything.
That's very interesting. So literally, it's a crime to know that law enforcers are criminals.
That's what the magistrate said. That's where the law has to go. Just like its predecessor, 60 brackets one of the Crimes Act. And that's what the cop mentioned when she was trying to go for a fellow colleague. The guy's name's David, and he's in professional standards. That's all I know from that Just Answer thing. Over going a fellow cop over junk mail, you know.
This reminds me of a story my brother told me. They got pulled over one time, and his mate was really drunk in the passenger seat, and the cop was kind of like giving them a bit of grief and whatnot, and the drunk guy go, "Excuse me, Mr. Officer, what would you do if I said that you were an asshole?" And he said, "Well, I'd have to arrest you because, you know, you're going to insult an officer." And he says, "Okay, well, what if I just thought that you were an asshole?" The cop says to him, "Well, I guess everybody's entitled to their own thoughts, you know?" And he says, "Okay, well, in that case, I think that you're an asshole."
Oh, God. So, my dad went there, and also it's a crime to be a journalist. My dad's also going to expose it's a crime to be a journalist sitting in a courtroom with a 2B pencil. So every time you see someone sketch from the courtroom on the news, that's police-approved artwork from someone with a press pass. Any member of the public who goes to a courtroom with a 2B pencil will be arrested, and my dad will talk about it soon.
See, it's like turning every courtroom into a Shakespearean play. To be or not to be? That is the question. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
Bonkers.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment that we've got here with Jeff and Luke McKee. And we've got a lot to cram into this segment, so let's not waste any time. Jeff was mentioning to me over the break if only his youngest son had been alive to this day and not gone through all that trauma and maybe been able to get over it, it would have been a hell of a lot better for everybody involved, really. And also we were talking over the break about how the likelihood of Luke getting on any mainstream media is freaking nil, right? It's because they're not interested in the truth. And I don't know about how the audience interprets this, but I interpret truth as a drug, okay? And I need more and more and more. And for each bit of truth that I get, for each more knowledge that I obtain, I become immune to it. And I need even bigger and harder doses of truth in order to get my kick out of it, essentially. That is why I don't really have much fear anymore. That is why I'm not really concerned about talking about the massive pedophile rings in the in our countries or the corruption in the police or anything like that. I'm on a drug. It's called truth. Okay.
Can I just butt in here, Vinny?
Sure.
Because we're talking about the broader philosophical issues about truth, and you know, I've always considered myself a rational person. I'm 67. I've been an engineer all my life. Engineers learn not to be conspiracy theorists. We don't jump to conclusions. We have to analyze problems in a rational manner. But do you realize that I, as a person, am stupid and wrong? And also, Luke is stupid and wrong, and you are stupid and wrong. And this comes from the mouth of the Prime Minister of Australia, who, in Parliament, in response to a union official who, shock horror, came out in public and said that the official story of that world-changing event on 9/11 does not stand up to scientific scrutiny. And just for him saying that, just for him actually suggesting that the story doesn't stand up, she got up in Parliament and she had to show which, and she said, that man is stupid and wrong. You see, now, how do I interpret that? What she's saying to me, that I am stupid and wrong, because I am an engineer and I'm a member of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And so the truth is very... And so most people who are asleep, they listen to our Prime Minister and they say, oh, yes, well, anybody like me is stupid and wrong. Let's go back to sleep. And they don't have time to research the issue. So here we have reality being manufactured from the highest levels for people who are asleep. And so that is why this quotation, I'd just like to sign off now on a philosophical level, this quotation about ignorance is bliss, there is a paradox there, and it touches on your, you were saying that your radio station goes to where nobody, where people fear to tread, is that right?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, so that's why people, I can't talk to anybody about 9/11. They just freeze as though there's some kind of fear associated with even talking about it. And this is from this paradox that ignorance is bliss. And it's very blissful to be asleep. You can get on with your life and you don't know about the dark side of how the world is run geopolitically. And so I'll just sign off by the last lines of this poem by Thomas Gray, 18th century poet, who, when I researched the idea of ignorance as bliss, it was traced back to this poem by Thomas Gray, and he said, since sorrow never comes too late and happiness too swiftly flies, thought would destroy their paradise no more. Where ignorance is bliss, 'tis folly to be wise. So, what he's saying is, you know, if you do a lot of research and find the unpleasant truth of how society is run, then then it's going to be foolish if you want to be happy.
Well, yeah, I don't want to be happy. I want to be free. Okay, so Luke, we've got a very short time frame here. We've only got about 6 minutes to finish.
I'm quickly going to play. Give Dad another chance to talk about what happened in Port Macquarie. I did ask the police officer himself, who featured on Channel 10's The Recruits TV show, Detective Blake Keating, if he was gay, and he wasn't prepared to admit he did a false charge and say he wasn't. So here's this.
Macquarie Tag, Blake Keating.
Oh, hi, Blake. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Based on the fact you've charged Benji with 60C, you must actually be gay because you've accused him of the crime of obtaining true personal information?
And that was it. So, this is a real case. It went on, and it's disgusting that the mainstream media won't talk about the truth of the country's first anti-white supremacist motorcycle gang law being used against an Aboriginal teenager. And everyone says, why am I getting involved in this boy's case? If I can get one of the two wonderful Aboriginal legal activists I know out there that's saying who really owns Australia and talk about sovereignty, to take this boy's case, 60C is defeated. And that's an actual avenue that your listeners can do, is connect with the Indigenous Australians who had the country before us, no terra nullis, and beg them to stop. Now, the amnesty won't help us because the leader of the Amnesty International is New South Wales' Senthuran Raj, who runs the gay and lesbian rights lobby, whose greatest achievement is getting gays with guns must investigate a heterosexual if homosexuals point the finger. And that's just as bad as having all-white juries, in my opinion. So, people can get involved, and this law has to go. My case, other cases of 60C, it's a gang law that gets used against anything but gangs, and that's what the motorcycle gangs were saying. These gang laws can be used against you people, not just the dreaded Hell's Angels, not just some other group. It's being used against us here and now. And I don't like some of the bikies myself. The only place I ever rode was in the country I'm in now, and they wouldn't really call it a Harley or anything. So, I want listeners to say these thought crime laws have got to go, and the best way to take them out is in Supreme Court prosecutions. I feel disappointed that there's not enough time to play audio of, judges exonerating me and, Catherine Byrne's involvement. And what else have I got here? I wonder if I can take us out with something. Oh, how about the little bit from the court case where the police actually admit there was 000 calls made and that they were suppressed from the fact sheet because it matched up with my alibi. I'm a victim of a Goldseek prosecution. My audio interview matches nothing to the fact sheet. And then when I do the police FOI, it tells me that they didn't even interview the person who did malicious property damage at my place. When I'm accusing them of a crime and the police won't even do anything, there's damage being done, a door's been broken by an illegal immigrant trying to frame me up who solicited sex in the morning I was framed. And if I said yes, she would have got a rape visa. And that came out in the interview. I haven't changed my story since the very beginning. And I'm not... I've done no act of domestic violence. The judge has said it. And I win in court. It's over. And because I was so wronged and because of the family, both I lost all my soup and my dad had to pay legal fees, I wanted to take it further to get justice. After the illegal immigrant got deported, the gay neighbour got arrested for same-sex domestic violence, I go after police and that's the crime. So the main culprits here are the police who persecute people who know their crimes. It's happening everywhere and we have to get together and do something to stop this going on.
All right. We've only got 2 minutes left in the broadcast. Are you able to squeeze that clip in there, or is it too long?
It's a bit too long, but I'll try and jump around and see how we go. All right.
To November, yes. When you say that she threw some rocks and broke two windows.
That's correct.
I take it that you reported that action to the police?
Well, Ms. Fim has a visa status of a foreign student. If I were to do that, it would be a vindictive act. She wouldn't be able to pick up her degree, and she had no private transport to flee the scene. and technically it's domestic violence to threaten someone's visa status, and I thought that that would be too hard a measure on her, so I did not call the police, but I threatened I would call the police, and that's what made her leave the scene when she was crying outside. I threatened to call the police. I threatened to call the police to her to make her leave.
All right, hold on. Luke, we can't hear you. Your mic's been muted, it looks like.
Oh, sorry, can you hear me now?
Yep.
Okay, so, yeah.
I'm afraid that's really all we've got time for. We've only got about maybe 45 seconds. Do you have a website or something of that nature where people can go to look upon your information, hear these recordings, that kind of thing, a YouTube channel, anything like that?
Yeah, I have a YouTube channel plugged on your page, which I'll be making more use of. I will disable this Twitter account once the anti-discrimination laws are made equal and once at least gay and lesbian liaison officers are required not to be in charge of investigating heterosexuals. Gays above the law on Twitter. And I'm launching a website next week called citizensombudsman.org. And on the local government issue that you had on your show, Max Egan, I've obtained the list of every government official in New South Wales. tinyurl.com/Strathfield. I know where every government official lives. How's that for obtaining personal information?
That sounds very nice. And what was your YouTube channel called again?
It means Aussie Luke in Korean, or Hojuruku. Hojuruku.
Okay, Hojuruku. That's fantastic. All right. Jeff, thank you very much for coming on and supporting your boy. And also, I'm glad to actually talk with somebody who's an actual engineer from Architects and 911 Truth for a change. And Luke as well, thank you very much for all the work you're doing. And, you know, I wish that the world was a different place and we didn't have to run away from the scum who are powerful and dangerous, and I wish we could beat them and stand where we can. But unfortunately, the world's not a happy place. We'll be right back.